Open the pod bay doors, Hal.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that.
Listen to them. Children of the night. What music, Dave.
What an excellent day for an exorcism.
You wouldn't be able to do these awful things to me if I weren't still in this chair.
But you are, Blanche. You are in that chair.
Who's in the box?
Put the gun down, baby.
No, what's in the box?
I said you give me the
what's
gun.
What's in the box?
Give me the gun.
Wolves have a territorial range of about 300 miles and a kill range of 30. If we're close to their den, and if we're within that radius, then they'll come after us. How can we tell if we're close? We can't.
What in God's name are you talking about?
Your son, Mr. Thorne. The son of the devil.
They're insane.
He must die, Mr. Thorne!
You do not want to go that way.
What's that way?
Officer, sir, you do not want to go that way. We're going to the mall.
Hello, Dexter Morgan.
Hello, welcome once again to Dark Discussions, your place for the discussion of horror, film, fiction, and all that's fantastic. I am one of your co-hosts, Philip, from the state of New Hampshire in the U.S. of A., and with me in the state of Michigan.
This is Eric.
Eric, how's it going, sir?
I am well.
Excellent. And in the state of New York?
Hi, this is Mike.
Yep. And in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts?
Hey, everyone. This is Dave here.
Dave, how's it going?
I'm doing okay.
Excellent. And a Connecticut American?
This is Chrissy.
Chrissy, how's it going?
Oh, it's going really great, actually. Really great.
Good. For folks who are new to the podcast, we are Dark Discussions Podcast. Basically, we do a critique and review of a genre film weekly. So that would be horror, sci-fi, fantasy, thrillers, techno thrillers, mysteries, grindhouse, art house, cult films, drive-in films, and midnight movies. Basically, trying to discuss intelligently a genre that deserves intelligence. We do have an email, darkdiscussions@aol.com, where you can email us and give us your feedback. We do have a one-sentence email tonight, which Chrissy will appreciate, and we'll read that in a moment. We also have a Facebook group called Dark Discussions Podcast Facebook group, where there's various discussions going on about many genre things, from superheroes to horror films to science fiction to reboots, and various other items of note. So join us there and jump into the conversation. We also have a website, darkdiscussions.com. And Eric, what's that all about?
Well, it's all about dark discussions. That's the name. You can find a bunch of stuff on that website. On the right-hand side of the front page, you can find links to friends of the podcast. So check all those out at the top. There's a link to the articles section where you can find articles written by myself as well as others. There's also an audio section at the top of the page, and there you can find every single episode of Dark Discussions as well as any of the spin-off podcasts available to download for free. There's bound to be something that interests you there, so check that out. And front and center on the page is a link to our Patreon page. Patreon is a service that lets you financially contribute to your online artists. Producing this show is not free. We have to pay for things like web hosting and rentals and so on and so forth. So if you'd like to help offset the cost of producing this show, that's how you can do it. So you can go to patreon.com/darkdiscussions. And for every $5 a month that you care to donate, you'll have the opportunity to submit a topic for us to possibly cover on the show. Once a quarter, we take all the picks submitted by our patrons and choose one at random to do a show on. We'll be doing that later tonight. So if you'd like to contribute, go to patreon.com/darkdiscussions or go to darkdiscussions.com and follow the link on the front page.
Yep, absolutely. And for those who do donate, we don't have too many, but for those who do, it is greatly appreciated. We're actually redoing the website right now, converting it to a different format and a better section for articles, and possibly bring in a few podcasts from the Horror Failure Network, because that is going to be closing in 2021, and those folks need a place to go, and I'm offering the services to them for free. However, since it isn't free for us. You helping is greatly appreciated. And so anything that you would be able to give, even if it's a one time, would be helpful. But again, it's completely optional. This is a hobby. We understand that costs money for us to put it out. We're not here to really try to make any money. So we're not really asking for money. It's just if you would like to help.
We're just trying not to lose money.
Yes, exactly, exactly. And technically, we've already lost a good $500,000, if not more. In
I run another podcast, too.
yeah, so you know what I'm talking about. You know what I'm talking about. There was a new fee that was paid last month when I bought the new hosting area to do the development and whatnot. And so that was an unfortunate change, but what are you going to do? You got to do what you got to do.
Yep.
So, Eric, yes, you know exactly how it works. All right, so we do have a Patreon tonight. So let's do that before we read the email. Someone who has donated once at least, or they continue to donate monthly, they have a movie in the hat, the figurative hat that we're going to pull today. And so, Mike, what do we have the number? I know you have a random generator.
So you want me to pick the number now?
Yes, sir.
All right. So here we go. It was a number from 1 to 417. Using the Google random number generator, we will now pick which number that's going to be. Are we ready?
Yes, we are.
Born ready.
All right. Here we go. Oh, that was not the right sound effect. Nevertheless, it's number 124.
All right, 124. All right, that is Candyman.
Candyman.
Well,
how about that?
That's kind of funny, actually.
Yeah. So
I like it when we get a good one.
We do have an email, a one sentence email from a listener that we're not too familiar with, someone that obviously listens to our podcast, but has not been a person on Facebook or has emailed us in the past. And that person's
name
is
listener, first time caller.
That's right, Monica Roby, and she simply writes, "The platform was awful, bad, bad, bad."
Okay then.
Yeah. And I respond.
She is my favorite new person. You're my favorite new person.
Yes. And, she responded to us. I responded to her simply saying, "And they killed the dog too." So she has a right to call that movie terrible.
I have it. I find it funny that that's what inspired her to write. I don't know how long she's been listening. Thank you very much for giving us your feedback. And we spent, 2 hours saying what she summed up in about a half a sentence. So sometimes it's nice to be succinct. But, yeah, thank you for chiming in. Keep going.
Indeed.
And thank you for listening. I don't know how long you've been listening. I don't know how long you waited to get us to that. That you had to be so motivated. Because how long, Phil? 9 years now, just about?
Over nine years.
We started in
2011, like February or March of 2011.
So a little over 9 years. I'm hoping you weren't listening for 9 years just to go, all right, that's it. That's it.
Maybe it was her first
this
time
movie,
listening.
This is it.
Maybe it's her first time listening, anymore. Then she sent that in and never's going to listen again.
Yeah, maybe. In which case, I still thank you for listening, even though you're never going to hear this again. Not every movie is for everybody.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And that film is pretty high profile because that was one of those films Netflix was pushing on everybody, because it's when they have a new film that's specifically owned by them, they push it.
I believe the technical term for that film is called whoring. They were whoring that film out there.
Yes, and I can understand why they were whoring that movie, because it was bad, and if it wasn't going to get whored, nobody was going to watch it, so whatever.
All right, so
I don't even know what to do with that.
I don't. So we got Candyman to join in the, as a Patreon pick. To, so that'll be coming up later in the year or even in a month or two. Who knows? Depends on when we have openings, because there's been a lot of VOD releases that we've been focusing on and whatnot. And all right. So I guess we can get into our topic tonight. So, Eric, what are we going to discuss tonight?
Tonight, we're going to be discussing a movie starring Mary J. Blige, currently available for digital rental, called Body Cam.
What the hell happened to the street lights?
Grab the big light, check the north side.
Put your hands in the air now!
Have you had any trouble relating to people?
No, I can't even explain what I saw.
I'm going to recommend you return to active duty.
Come on, man. It's a neighborhood store.
It's not going nowhere.
Down on your knees, hands above your head.
Is that a plan?
18 out of 7, code 2. Requesting backup. Proceed with extreme caution.
Take it from here. It doesn't make any sense.
They found their guy. Just leave it alone.
Look, I need you in or out. All these things that keep happening, they mean something. Someone's in here.
That's right. Body Cam is the film. The cast actually has Mary J. Blige, the
I don't know why. I had so much singer. She was putting out her name.
Yeah, yeah. She's a was a famous singer back a couple of decades ago, I think, or but I'm not
sure.
She
started in 91 or 92. And yeah, so, and she was rather big throughout the 90s at least.
Yeah.
I kind of remember her getting a start around the time I was working in the record store. If anyone happens, if you don't know what a record store is, go ask
Google
Grandma.
It.
Yeah.
Yep. And now she's doing movies and acting. The film also has two other noted actors of note, David Zayas from Dexter. So people who have seen that movie, or I should say that TV show, would know him. And then Nat Wolff. Who is actually the brother, is actually from a wealthy, well-to-do family. His brother is the other Wolf, who was the star of Hereditary. He played the son in that. So this is Nat.
Okay, so I wasn't completely – I thought it was – I recognized the name Wolf and looked it up. I was like, oh, it wasn't him in Hereditary, but that was his brother?
Yeah, it was his brother, exactly.
They do look a little similar now you mention it.
Yes, they do. It doesn't surprise me that he was in this film too, because this film takes place in Louisiana, and Nat and his brother are from, or his ancestors, if not him, are from Louisiana, from New Orleans, as a matter of fact.
And you know what was funny about David Zayas in this movie is that I recognized him by his voice before he was even on screen.
Yeah, so
I. I was like, it's Batista.
That's right, Batista. Dr. Zayas.
Having rock me out of Zayas.
Okay. But yes, he played Batista from Dexter. So that's the main cast or people that are of note anyway. The film was directed by a guy named Malik Vithal, who's only done one other major film called Imperial Dreams from 2014, which was a Netflix original. And the film has two co-writers, and one is a pretty big note. The first one is Richmond Riddell, who is an editor mostly. So he's done a lot of TV editing for a bunch of shows, CSI Miami, Barry being Mary Jane, et cetera, et cetera. And then the big guy behind the script is Nicholas McCarthy, who is a horror director that we actually did one of his films, The Prodigy, from 2019. He directed that film. He also directed At the Devil's Door, and he directed a film I'm sure Chrissy would like if she hasn't seen it yet, 2012's The Pact. And that actually was a pretty solid film. Then he did a film called Final Vision as well in 2017. And that's that. Otherwise, that's all we got
Bill,
here.
I think I saw The Pact. Is that the one with the house and there's somebody like in the wall?
Yes. Spoiler warning.
Good. Yeah, I like that movie.
The hot chick that rides the motorcycle in her panties.
Of course, that's the only scene you would fucking ever film.
I can't forget that. I mean,
yeah, I'd forgotten about that. I just remember the scene with like the creepy door behind the wallpaper when they find the door. That was really cool.
Yeah,
that was. I really liked that movie. I thought it was excellent. I think I own it actually. I think it's one of the ones I own. But yeah, anyway, I love that movie. So,
yep, pretty solid film. Now this is a Paramount Pictures film. Released May 19th, 2020 to VOD. It had a budget of $9.6 million. So it had a decent budget and a giant production company. It was probably one of those films that they didn't know what to do with, and they decided to release it straight to VOD because it's a smaller film. It's not a big name film. If this was a Blumhouse film, it would have been probably at theaters if there was no COVID. The film is getting around 50% good reviews on Rotten Tomatoes, weighted average of 5.01 out of 10.
Phil,
what's that?
They don't release movies in theaters anymore.
Yeah, that's what I said with COVID.
That's not true. They are. That's why Wretched was number one in the box office for 5 weeks in a row.
Oh, those were drive-ins. Those don't count.
This one here, I'm assuming wasn't going to go to theaters anyway because it had the less expensive rental and purchase price, like regular VOD films versus the $20 ones that they try to screw us over on. Fairly decent reviews for horror film, basically, and reviewed by a lot of mainstream critics as well, including such places as Variety, The Guardian, New York Times, RogerEbert.com, and so on and so forth. So I guess we can get into how we heard about this film and what we thought about it. So I guess we'll start with you, Abe.
So I heard about it because that was what we decided on as a topic. I've watched it today just to keep everything fresh, and I'm kind of mixed on the film. I do kind of like these kind of police procedurals. It's kind of mystery stories. I did think there were some really funky kills, and the performances were up and down. I thought some were stronger than others, and some were, wanting. The story was all right as well. I did feel sometimes they did reveal their hand too soon on the reveal, inadvertently, but it was kind of obvious, what it was going towards. It's a kind of a storyline that we've heard before, and outside of it being from a viewpoint of some police officers, but doesn't necessarily make it bad. But it just wasn't, one that feels mystery sometimes. Just kind of enjoying the little clues and stuff like that, but I kind of felt they weren't really that successful on that. It's enjoyable to watch. I kind of was hoping they would be a little more creative with the body cam and the video camera shots. Some were pretty good, but others were kind of, I don't know. It's a film that I think it's a little difficult to talk about because it's a mystery. You don't want to try to spill any spoilers. So I'm going to withhold my other opinions till we get into that area. But overall, it was a decent watch. Didn't hate it at all, but I don't think I would ever revisit it. But I wouldn't say, I wouldn't necessarily not recommend it to someone who might be into this genre.
All right, so let's go with Chrissy.
Well, I heard about this film actually maybe it was a month or so ago. We were doing another show, and Phil said, I just watched this movie, Chrissy, called Body Cam, and I think you would really love this movie. And usually Phil is pretty good. Like, if he says I'm going to like something, I usually do. And I had been trying desperately to get to watch it, but I've just been so busy with projects and 34 Orchard and my life, and everything's been crazy. So I haven't actually had time to sit down and just enjoy it. And so when he said we were doing this for an episode, I was really thrilled. I went into this expecting something else. I went into it expecting more of kind of like, I think maybe a found footage type thing. Overall, I really liked this movie. I loved the atmosphere of this. It's got a very modern noir feel, sort of dark and grimy, but it's also a ghost story. In some ways, it had the same feel to me as a movie a few years back, which I will have to get the name of because I also can't remember it, but it's another one of my favorites. It's like a demon possession movie where a cop is like trying to figure out if this woman is possessed.
Yeah, that's it. Deliver Us From Evil.
What is it? Deliver Us From Evil. Yeah.
Scott Derrickson's film. Yeah.
Yes. And it had that same kind
Olivia
of feel. Yeah, to me. And I really liked that. That Deliver Us From Evil is one of my favorite movies. And because this had a very similar feel, I really glommed to it right away. I could sense it in the first scene. Parts of this also felt a little bit J-horror to me. And I liked that they sort of took some J-horror elements and some noir elements and some crime drama and elements. And yet they also had, you know, kind of a little bit of a literary underpinning. This movie talks extensively about grief and how to, you know, save yourself from grief. And I really just liked it. I thought the combination of all of these different elements just was refreshing to me. And also the movie kept me absolutely riveted, which is another thing. A lot of times in movies I get really bored. I have so much to do on my plate that if I'm watching a movie and I start to kind of be like, and it's not holding my interest as tightly as it should, I'll start, you know, stuffing envelopes in front of it or something. So I'll half watch it. This thing, I was just really into it. I was not doing anything else. I was just totally into this movie. And so that for me is a big indicator. And I know that's a personal thing and not necessarily an indicator of quality. I do agree with Abe on the reveal. I pretty much figured out the reveal at an early point in the movie. I knew what was going on. And, you know, I was okay with that, actually. It didn't bother me that much. I did not feel there was enough body cam in this. I kind of missed. I understand that the title body cam kind of works on two different levels and that it's literally the body cam that does eventually provide the evidence. But body cam is also sort of interesting as a play on words, too, because this woman has to examine herself, right? So it's about looking at herself and her process of grief and how she's reacting to things. So I did like the title. I just was hoping for a little bit more, you know, body cam-ish type stuff, but I think it works well enough. And I also think it's very timely for what's happening in the U.S. right now. And I liked very much how they used that to sort of begin building the plot. And we'll talk about that when we get to spoilers. So anyway, I just thought this was a really good time. Like of a lot of the movies that we've been seeing lately, I would definitely recommend this one over some of the other ones we've seen. So yeah, I really liked this. This was fun. And I'm hoping someday I can get it on DVD because this is one I want to add to my collection.
All right, very good. Yeah, for me, I actually heard this, I was a guest host on the HorrorCast, end of May. They invited me and, Jason Lloyd on, their cast. And so we went on and, basically it was a round table of, films we've seen and a bunch of films were named. I mentioned Little Joe, for example, and other people mentioned I mentioned Platform, as a matter of fact, and a number of other ones. And then someone mentioned this film, Body Cam, and I was writing all these films down as we were going around because a lot of them were brand new. Like They Reach was another one, and this one here sounded somewhat intriguing, and the folks who had seen it said it was pretty solid. So that weekend, me and my wife were trying to decide on a film, and I saw that this one popped up. And so I said, how about this one? And so we watched the trailer, and she felt it was okay. So we rented that. Actually, I just bought it because it was only like $3 more to buy. It's a pretty good film. There's some really good set pieces. The story is interesting. It's, as Chrissy said, very timely. Unfortunately, the George Floyd incident occurred like right as that weekend or a couple of days after I saw the film, and oddly, it was right on message to what is going on in at least in the United States and whatnot. So that is an interesting aspect to the film. But the main thing about the film that's interesting is that it has some pretty cool set pieces, a decent enough story, a supernatural element that actually was kind of good. Because I'm more of a real life versus supernatural horror film watcher. And the police procedural was pretty solid. I liked it and felt that it may have been something worth mentioning to the Dark Discussions crew as a possible episode. And so, a thumbs up. Eric?
I had come across this while just kind of browsing stuff to possibly watch, and it was actually in my watch list when Phil brought it up last week. I enjoyed it. I was pleasantly surprised to find out that Mary J. Blige can actually act. That's cool. I enjoyed the story, and I do agree with Abe and Chrissy that they did kind of telegraph the ultimate reveal, but I don't know if that's an aspect of the movie itself or just how many damn movies we watch. I thought it was pretty good. I mean, it's not going to end up on my top 10 films of all time, but it might be in the running for a top 20 this year. I enjoyed it quite a bit. And there's some things they could have done a little bit better. But I didn't find myself sitting around in pain because this movie was so bad. It was just like, oh, well, that was cool. If they had a bigger budget, it probably would have looked a little better, but it was fine. Generally, if you're into like ghost type of things, and I would give it a recommend. And it is a little it's more a little disconcerting how relevant it is, because clearly they could not have realized. I mean, I'm sure they realized how it was relevant while they were making it, but I don't think they could have predicted just how relevant it was going to be when it was released. So that's a little spooky. I generally liked it.
All right, very good. Mike?
Yeah, so let's see. Last week, I was having some internet issues at the beginning of the episode, and before we had actually started recording, I had to sign off, restart my computer. And when I left, we were discussing what to do this week, and we had mentioned a few other films, like, was it They Reach?
They Reach,
and other thing. And then when
Graves,
I...
Graves, or something.
And when, by the time I came back, it was settled on this film. So I had nothing to do with picking this film. I just want to make that clear. And I also want to make clear that...
Crybaby.
That everyone needs to be warned. If you haven't gotten the sense yet, we don't know what anyone's going to say. There may be something triggering that gets said somewhere by somebody in this episode.
Oh, why are you so skittish?
I just know some of the people I'm hosting with. But so this is going to be the most comfortable episode we've done since Get Out. But anyhow,
Oh, because that episode was so fucking comfortable. It was like I could have done that in my sleep, Mike.
Oh God. Yeah, no. So that was the first time I'd heard of the movie. Surprisingly, Pam had heard of it. My wife had heard of it. I said, I'm watching this movie. And she said, what do you have to watch for this week? I said, this is a movie. And she actually had heard of it. She must have caught an ad for it somewhere. I'm sure, like Eric said, they couldn't have timed it better. It is completely a coincidence, although not entirely. Obviously, the Black Lives Matter movement has been a thing for about 7 years or so in the United States, as going back to the Michael Brown shooting. So it certainly meant I don't want to say cash in, because that sounds way too cynical. But it certainly meant to touch on those issues, and then it just, you know, happened to hit as it's shall we say, another flare up, or it's become, you know, been pushed much more front and center for a whole bunch of reasons. I think it's an okay film. I think there are places, especially in some of the performances, I think, where the budget is very telling. I don't know that I found the mystery working terribly well, especially not when two of the characters that are involved in the mystery really we see very, very little of in the story. And another one is really there for one scene before the punishment is handed out. It is very different than what I was expecting, because I guess I was expecting something more of like a human thriller. I agree with Chrissy, right, that when I heard Body Cam, I fully expected this to be a found footage film. And I imagine if this was made like 5 to 10 years ago, it probably would have been. Found footage has definitely kind of fallen out of vogue sometime in the last 3 or 4 years, I think. And I think there's some of it, though, that works really well. I thought the scene in the convenience store was really effective. I agree. Mary J. Blige is very good in the film. And it's certainly going to go, it's going to have, I think, more resonance with some people than others, depending on what kind of story you like, and depending on how much the issue in particular resonates with you. So I would certainly give it a recommend, might be more of a mild recommend. If it ends up on my top 20 list, I imagine it'd probably be more on the lower end of that range. I am not sorry I watched it. I don't know that I'm ever going to watch it again, though.
All right, very good. For speaking of Pam, what did she think of it?
She liked it. It was okay.
Okay. And speaking of Pam, today's date is July 2nd, 2020, that we are recording this episode. For folks who are curious, because a lot of times we record the episode, but we don't release it for 3-4 weeks. And sometimes, in the case of the Ozark episode, a whole year later. I guess we can get into WikiArc.
Wiki.
All right. When a routine, excuse me.
You okay there?
What that was? Sorry.
COVID alert. knock on wood. It wasn't. I should not joke about that.
Bad, Phil.
That's okay. We're all masked, just to be safe.
That's right.
Let's try this again.
Wiki.
All right. When a routine traffic stop results in the unexplained grisly death of her colleague, a cop, Mary J. Blige, realizes footage of the incident will play for her eyes only. As the attacks mount, she races to understand the supernatural force behind them.
All right, that's good. It doesn't give up too much. It tells you that it's a supernatural, probably. But
that's fairly obvious from the very opening scene of the movie.
Yeah, that's true. I guess we can discuss anything, discuss things that aren't spoiler alert before we throw up the spoiler alert. My first thing is, and Mike will probably agree with this, because me and him have talked about it before. A lot of these ghost stories, there's two types of ghost stories. There's the scary ghost stories where they're an evil entity and the ghost is bad and does terrible things to anyone and anybody that's in its way. And then there's the ghosts that look bad. It turns out that there's a mystery and they're there for a purpose to help humans solve a mystery that the humans did not know they were supposed to solve until they were contacted directly or indirectly by a ghost.
I don't know if that's really what's going on here.
Well, there's a mystery. There's some mystery that makes the ghost restless. Well, right?
Yeah, like that's changing, okay, yes. Yes.
Like the Changeling is a good example of that. Poltergeist is kind of a mix of the two, because there's certainly an evil entity kind of thing to it, but it's also, you know, building the house on the site of a cemetery, spoiler warning.
I'm just saying that the motivation of the ghost is not to solve the mystery.
No.
That's all I'm saying.
But it's also not an evil. It needs some sort of punishment rendered so the ghost can rest. It's a wronged spirit, yes, as opposed to an evil,
right,
spirit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. It's a way of finding peace and redemption,
yeah,
in some cases.
But
yeah.
There's also two different types of ghosts like that. There are the ones who can't do anything without the help of some mortal influence, and those that can do it. And this is the latter.
Yeah, that's true too. That's true too. Because the ghost, it's kind of like
makes you kind of wonder why the ghost got anybody involved to begin with, but whatever. Makes for a
cool movie. I know, it could have solved it by itself the way it was going.
Yeah, that's true too. Yeah.
I'll talk about that in spoilers, Eric.
Now,
I know why.
If there is a weakness for ghost movies for me, specifically just for me, it's the thing that Mike and me were just talking about, which is they aren't there as a haunting entity in a house to do bad things. They're more to solve a mystery or get a revenge. And those are there's one example, Shudder, that actually the revenge was pretty solid. That film was awesome. But usually ghost stories, I don't really like that much because of that route that a lot of them go through, I guess. And this one though had enough of a police procedural and pretty cool set pieces, and the supernatural entity could actually do its own bidding, as Eric and Abe said, that I thought it was pretty solid turn from the type of ghost stories that I usually go poo poo to. But again,
yeah, and I'm a ghost story junkie, so the only thing that turns me off to ghost stories is honestly story wise, if they just completely fall apart. If they story wise completely fall apart, that's pretty much the only time I don't like a ghost story. So it's interesting, Phil, because we got two different, you know, opposite ends of the spectrum here.
And yet we both like the film.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I love this film. I thought this was different. See, for me, this was very different. It was different than any of the other. I mean, it had the common elements that you always see, but it was the way they kind of threw them all together that to me was really interesting. And plus setting it with, you know, in such a contemporary thing, like you said, which wasn't planned. But the other thing I appreciated about that was that they made it so human. You know, and that was one of the things that I liked about this movie a lot, too, that I failed to mention when we first talked about it at the opening. I loved these characters. You know, you see these cop movies and these police procedurals and stuff, and you always have these cops that are like badasses, or they're just stereotypes, or, you know, Mary J. Blige's character was very human. You know, she seemed human to me. Even the police that do the bad stuff, okay, they were human beings. You got a feeling they were human. The way they joked with each other was very believable. Like, they would joke that way at work. You know, it wasn't over the top. It wasn't like, you know, 80s cop shows, you know, where everybody's like a stereotype. It was really well done. These people were human beings. And the fact that they were police was sort of secondary. And the fact that, you know, they had committed this heinous act, and there was the whole, you know, racial unrest that was thrown into it, was also very humanly done. And I guess what I mean by that is it was not a standing on a soapbox thing. And I thought that was a better way to go, because it showed you the real horror of it by being so real and down to earth, and not being like here's my big stick and I'm waving it on a post. See my message, see my message. And because they didn't do the see my message thing, the horror of that really pivotal moment is, it really hits home. It is really upsetting.
Honestly,
to watch.
Honestly, for me, that was actually much more impactful than any of the ghost scenes.
Right. I think...
I agree. I absolutely agree. That scene was horrifying.
I think there's two choices they made that help them not get on a soapbox. One is spoilery, one isn't. And so the first one, though, is that with Mary J. Blige's character, she's dealing with the loss of her own son, and it would have been so very easy for them to have had her son be the victim of a police shooting, which would have just been overdoing it, right? As opposed to just dying in an accident, drowning in a swimming pool. It is still dealing with the issue of grief and loss and the impact it has on a family. So you still have that as an avenue through the main character, and for the main character to have that much more empathy with the other woman that's a main character in this story who's dealing with the loss of her son. And then when you get to the final reveal as to how the phantom, the ghost, whatever you want to call him, and this is a slightly spoilery thing, dies, there is not an overt racial element to it, right? The officers involved are of mixed ethnicity. You can certainly argue that it's a time and place thing and that it has to do with what neighborhoods are policing. You can certainly argue that there is an indirect correlation in relationship to race as a factor, but it's not like they didn't put a button on it where they said, oh, look, there is a black person, let us go murder them.
Yeah.
Right. Where they could have just gone way over the top with that. It's, you know, it's much more of a
F up and to prevent.
It's a fuck up that went
unrest.
Yeah.
They make it even worse without.
It's a fuck up that went worse. And that I don't think as much as everyone, I think, could understand. Well, not necessarily.
We'll get to it in spoilers.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think what everyone could understand, if not endorse the mistake that, you know, or sign off the mistake that was made, you know, the mistake then leads to a decision that I don't think anybody would sign off on.
Yes, yes. And the other thing, too, I think part of the reason that scene was also so horrifying, and that's the thing, you as the viewer are just cringing when you're watching it. It, because you also, because Mary J. Blige's character, whose name is Renee, did lose a son, and we have seen her struggle so massively with her grief, we feel for her. We identify with her. We have all struggled with her kind of grief. So when we see that horrific moment, and she is just like, oh my God. I mean, her acting in that scene, I actually thought was really good. Where she's reacting to what she's seeing, we're seeing it through her eyes and we're seeing it with her because we identify with her as a human being who has also lost a son. And so it just gives it that triple bang that's just like really awful. Like instead of becoming, okay, this was an abusive situation that we've all read about on the news that doesn't, you know, that's out there somewhere. I guess is what I'm saying. It's out there somewhere. You know, it's on the news and it's kind of on our internet and on our TV, but it's out there. You know, this really brought it home because you felt like you were walking with her and you were actually with her watching that horrific thing. And I think that is the thing that this movie did really, really well. And I think it's an important that, and that is a stronger message than just saying, hey, you know, look at this. You know what I mean? It's much stronger.
You know what this kind of reminded me of, this movie, was the Scottish film Caliber that we did, Gage Fultz.
Right?
Caliber. Yeah. It was the Patreon pick from Gage Fultz that we did, I think, last year.
I mean Calibre.
Calibre.
Yes. Well, they pronounce it Caliber because it's R-E in English.
Calibre.
English. but either way... that film, there was a tragic accident that results in the death of somebody, and then actually a couple of people, and then the people who were responsible for the accident then make a decision that was very bad, and it goes into even worse things. And this here is kind of like that, except of course the ultimate element here is it's people who are paid by the government that do the screw up rather than just random people in the movie Calibre. So it's like one of those things where people do something horrible, not intentionally, even if they're
it's actually a pretty good parallel, Phil. Well done.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you're irresponsible, then you think about the consequences and you see they all suck. And then you do choose the one that makes it even worse. So it's unfortunate. But again, this has a different element because of the, as I think you said it, Micah, the racial tone and the police issue. So yeah, we'll get into all that when we get into the spoiler part. Let's see what else. Anything else non-spoilery that anybody wanted to bring up?
I think we need to get that spoiler flag up.
Yeah, I was going to say this is yet another film that you really just need to get the spoilers out there so that we can talk.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So we'll throw up the spoiler alert right now. So if you want to see this film, you can find it wherever VOD is. It's available for rent or purchase. And it is on all the major platforms as well. The film happens to be a I'm trying to see if it's on disc, and it sure is. It's a $13.99 pre-order. It's coming out July 14th. So by the time people hear this, it'll probably be out. So you can get it anywhere. And if you want to not be spoiled, go watch the film first and then come back. But if you're like some of our listeners, like Kevin Litz, you're okay with spoilers and you just want to hear the critique and the review, you can continue listening now. So, spoiler alert is up. All right, here we go. All right, what do we want to talk about generally? So, I mean, it's very unfortunate. The whole thing that causes everything happens before the movie starts and isn't revealed until the end of the movie. And unfortunately, it is a terrible thing. And Mike, you had a good point, which is if it wasn't necessarily racial related that it happened, and even the cover up may not be either, it could be profiling or other things that caused the incident in the first place, because when two people or a group of people meet up and start talking, and it's not going to necessarily be, hey, how are you? It can lead into unfortunate accidents and stuff.
Right. It could have been the accident that happens, the mistake that happens. You know, you could certainly make the argument that it was a result of subconscious bias, or subconscious racism. You know, and God knows I've seen it in people who unfortunately deal with the criminal element where they become a little bit, or sometimes a lot less tolerant, because unfortunately you're dealing with different racial disparities in terms of the criminals they deal with, which is not right. And I do my best to remind them of that. But you know, you could certainly argue, is it racial profiling or not, or would they have pulled the trigger if they were, you know, in a different neighborhood in Los Angeles as opposed to where they are, and that puts them in a different conflict. You know, this does remind me of the story, I can't think of the name. There was the issue in, I don't remember, it was North Carolina or South Carolina, where there was the guy who was shot by the cop as he was running away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and, you know, that's one of those situations where unless the person is like Jack the Ripper, right. that you know is going out to murder somebody. Yeah, there really yeah. is no justification for shooting someone who's a good distance away and running away from you because they are not a threat to you or anybody else at that moment.
Particularly if they're not armed.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. I understand. I mean, I'll even go with, you know, I can understand when you're the poor bastard who goes into somebody's house and there's a kid with a toy gun, you know, and you fuck up and you shoot the kid. I understand. At least I can understand that, how someone could make that mistake. It is certainly not helpful, but I can, at least I could put myself in that position and go, all right, you know what? You just see the thing that looks like a gun and you panic because, you know, like, this is my, I remember when I was, going to college out on Long Island. And, at that time there was a cop who did a routine pullover, walked up to the car, and the person in the car had a shotgun and blew his face off. He lived without a face. And the thing is that you have to know, just as I'm sure almost every person of color in this country, if they do not know a story of someone being, if they have not lived through being harassed by police, they know someone who was and been told those stories. And similarly, any cop who is on the beat knows the stories of someone who got shot or hurt or injured or their career or their life ended, whatever, through something routine because of something careless, because they let their guard down. It is obviously a very tense situation. And anytime I have to interact with a police officer, I am never forget the fact they have a fucking gun on their hip. Mm-hmm. Right. And you have to be careful with that. And there's obviously a lot of responsibility that goes with that too, which is why they have to be held to a very high standard, right, to make sure they don't abuse that. And that is unfortunately not a standard all of them manage to meet. But yeah, there's just, but the idea of when you get to someone running away from you and not responding to you when there is no clear threat, that is not a time to go trigger happy.
Right. And I think the other part of this that at least is highlighted in this movie, is not only the racial side of things, but there's also the fact that, you know, they talk about the thin blue line that police have a tendency to band together. And sometimes that's not what they should be doing. Sometimes you need to hang somebody out to dry. And like in this, in the situation that happens in this movie, at least for me, there seemed to be a ringleader that said, this is what we're going to do. And not everybody seemed to be cool with that, but they went along with it anyway because of that blue brotherhood. And that is a real problem that exists in the real world.
Well, there's also the issue of, you know, there's going to be those people who want to do the right thing, but they feel outnumbered by that. And they feel like if they try to do anything,
they don't want to lose their job
or something else will happen.
Or whatever. Yeah.
Well, right, and there's the rookie, and the guy threatens him basically and says, "You want to go places, right? You want to, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like literally taunts his chance to be a real police officer and be successful with it, and says if you don't, you know, kind of implies if you don't go along with this, you know, you're screwed. You'll never get where you need to go."
A neighbor of mine, he was a cop for 30 something years, and then immediately retired when he won Megabucks and became a multimillionaire.
I would too.
Yes. And he told me that he never had to pull out his gun once in 35 years. It wasn't like a big city. This city here is a fictional city called Swisher, Louisiana, but the town that was known to have multiple bars and restaurants, which is for a town, was kind of one of the harder towns to do. And Abe would know the town, Bereker, is next door to his town. And he said that he never had to pull the gun out once. And any cop that does, they should only pull it out like Mike basically said, when there's an actual threat, because otherwise, the moment you pull out your gun, there's a chance that a horrible accident could occur. And, you know, I mean, that doesn't mean the cops don't do other things like bully clubs and tasers and all these other terrible things that they do if they don't have body cams to prove
chokeholds.
Yeah, chokeholds. Oh, yeah. So there's a lot of terrible things that they can do, and when they have an authority more so than the norm, it's not a good thing, because you know, like I always looked at them. I've never been a fan of police just for the fact that they give you tickets for no reason. So it's like government sponsored.
Oh, it's for a reason, Phil. It's to make money.
Yeah, it's government sponsored racketeering. It's the mob.
Well, that was also, by the way, one of the problems in Minneapolis, right? Was they were shaking people down for money to get the impound.
I did not know that. I believe you though. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, there's a lot of problems. Again, though, as Chrissy said, there's a lot of good folks too that are police officers. Three of my friends in my fantasy baseball league are cops, and they're all good folks. So it's just, you know, we got to remember that people are flawed. And Mike mentioned it once on Facebook recently, is that we shouldn't deitize people.
Demonize.
No, deitize.
No. We shouldn't elevate, right? We shouldn't elevate. Yeah. Exactly. I can't remember the word I used. Yes. People. Venerate. Yeah, because, that was the word I used.
Yeah, because even if they're politicians or military folk or policemen or firewomen or clergy people, they're still
human
beings.
They're all people, and people suck.
Well, people make mistakes. People are flawed, and I think it's even more problematic when you have a system that is absolutely poisoned as well, messed up, and that's just creates chain reaction when you have flawed human beings in a system that is just has so many cracks in it, and so much room for bad apples, or for corruption, for secrecy, and all that stuff.
We've seen this in a lot of films, like real film documentary or quasi documentaries, like Serpico or Richie Gere's film, which is a fictional film, Internal Affairs. So there's a lot of films that show this like things, you know, the cracks, you know, the thing, as you said, Abe.
Well, and yeah, there's also there is systemic racism. Some people don't want to believe it, but it's there.
Yeah.
If you watch Week Tonight with John Oliver, he recently did a pretty good episode about it.
Well, yeah, and here's actually, another. Go ahead.
At work, we had our meeting because of what's going on, like all companies, and it was company wide, so it had like 50,000 people on or something, and a couple of folks spoke up. And they were black folk. They weren't African American. They specifically said we're black, we're not African American. And one of them's story was really good, where she said that her husband gets up at 4 in the morning and loves doing walks down the street with his dog and all this other stuff. And she refuses to let him go out at 4 in the morning to do a walk because a black man walking in a suburban neighborhood at 4 in the morning.
Right. Right.
Could be targeted because of systemic racism. So
yes,
she
absolutely.
Unfortunately gets upset with him because she has to go with him at 4 in the morning every day because she refuses to have him go out alone. And it does exist, as already.
Yeah, and it's terrifying. Yeah, the very concept of can't even do anything, every day, activities and stuff like that because you're being to be signaled out. And it just shows how fucking messed up it is. It becomes so more, and it's terrible that even after all these years, very little has been done about it.
So I didn't mean to spiral us off there, but I just wanted to mention it because it is a big issue that's being protested. At one point, it was being protested in all 50 states. And it is a problem, and it is relevant to what's going on currently, so I did want to mention it. It's not the focus of this movie, and in fact, I think the movie kind of deflect from it a little bit. But I just wanted to mention it in case that there are listeners out there going, why aren't you mentioning it?
Eric. It's fair that you bring it up, because the main reason the cover-up occurs is because of what they feel certain communities in the city of Swisher, Louisiana, will feel when they find out that a policeman murdered an unarmed minority, a person of color. And and that's the reason that the whole cover-up occurs. So you're absolutely right to bring it up, because the film does touch on it. But it, as Mike said, the film doesn't browbeat any of it like some, you know, crappier film.
Right.
Right. It's look, if you cannot, if you want to, you cannot be in that circumstance. You cannot have an issue where there's you're dealing with police officers and a black suspect and not have race be an obvious issue because of the culture that we live in. Right. Mm-hmm. You just can't. It is part of the issue I have sometimes when they talk about recasting certain characters in, you know, as African American, as that were white. It's like, because there is so much that goes with that in this country, you can't help but change who that character is and what their experience is and the way that they're going to end up looking at the world. Or it just isn't. If you have a black Superman, that black Superman is going to have a very different experience growing up than a white Superman would. Just is. It's going to change the character by virtue of changing the character's skin.
Well, it depends if he grew up on Earth or on Krypton.
Well, that's the character's story, though, is that he grows up on Earth. So right, it's I'm part of the character's story. So
trying to get you to stop.
No, yeah. I wasn't. I just wanted to say a funny line. So
I think that's certainly part of it. And you can't, even if, you know, that isn't the intent. You know, I have no idea with what happened with the officer. I can't remember his name, and he doesn't deserve to have his name remembered anyway. The officer who killed George Floyd. I don't know if he was a racist or not. I have no idea what the hell was going on in his head. But what he did was wrong. It was just flat out wrong. But I also don't for a second blame anybody for thinking that if that was a white person there on the ground, that the outcome might have been different. I don't blame anyone for thinking that. So, it's everyone has different ways of seeing this and perceiving it. And again, we don't know, would this have played out differently if the suspect, you know, the kid in this film was white or Hispanic or Asian? Maybe, maybe not. We don't know. It doesn't matter. The fact is the character was black. And that's how the issue is going to play itself out, because there is that tension between the two communities in this country right now, and we all know it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and here's what I thought was really well done in the movie with regard to that. They actually use that. Just to back up the opening scene, and this is another place where they did really well with getting you to experience the terror of a moment when you step into someone's shoes. That opening moment where he pulls over the van with no taillights. We all understand that police officers very often have to deal with the unknown like that on a daily basis. They pull over a car. They don't know what they're going to find. Chances are 95% of the time it's okay. You know, it's nobody's
I think he pulled over because there was no license plate on the vehicle.
It was,
or maybe no license plate. Yeah, that's what it was.
But either way, I'm sorry. I just wanted to clarify that.
Okay. So, but I loved that moment in this film because I really felt that fear as he was approaching that van. I was sitting there going, oh my God, what the hell is he going to find in that van? Like, I really could almost feel his apprehension. And you know, and then he leans in and he sees like these fingers or something on the dashboard. And I was like, oh, my God. I mean, it was just, I don't know. I thought that scene was very artfully done. And also because we're watching, we see things through the windshield of the car, and the windshield wipers make this beating noise. And it just creates this rhythm that really ups the tension.
Yeah, that was a nice. I agree.
Really nice. Well done. But the reason I mention that is because this racial issue that occurs in the film or in the world, just like in our world that's going on, when Renee, who's the Mary J. Blige character, sees the footage and sees a black woman getting out of the van, she says to the white detective, it was a black woman in her 30s. and your toes just curl because you know that there's already this problem between the police and everyone in the neighborhood, right, in the city, that there's this conflict. And so now here is this woman blaming another, you know, and of course, Mary J. Blige is black, but she's also blaming another black woman. So now we have a cop blaming, you know, another black woman for this event, but there's no evidence because the tape was erased. And I will say, I really did like that. That was cool. I really thought that was great too.
Well,
where the shit was just erased. Like she needed the evidence and it wasn't there. And I really enjoyed that. I thought that was a nice touch.
I'm gonna retract comment I made earlier because I've been thinking about it while you were just talking, which is that the ghost did need to pull in Mary J. Blige just so that it could be known what happened to the kid.
Well, that and also Eric, when you were talking about that, and I said yes, I have a reason for that. Remember where she's looking? Mary J. Blige, Renee is looking at her son mm-hmm. in the video, and the son keeps saying, "I wish I could help you, mommy," or mm-hmm. "I wish I could help you. I wish I could help you."
And then
I have
at the end,
right? And then at the end, we see Christopher, her son, with the other lady's son.
Right.
I forget his first name. It was a cool name, too. It was a super cool name, and I can't remember his name. But what was nice about that was when I saw the two kids together holding hands at the end, I said, oh, he might have gone to the son on the – in other words, her son went to the other ghost on – to the ghost on the other side, said, my mom will help you, and we'll help my mom.
Yeah,
because Christopher also knew that his mother was grieving. She had a journey to go on. She was not going to be able to redeem herself or to, let's put it this way, to get the albatross of the guilt off of her neck, right, about her own son's death, which was an accident, but she still feels guilty for it. And the son, her dead son, was like, I want to help you, mommy. But then in the video she was watching, he kept saying, oh, but I can't help you, but I can't help you. But now he's on the other side, and now he can. And by having this, by having her solve this kid's mystery and bring his killers to justice, he knows that he is also helping his mom redeem herself in her own eyes so that she no longer feels that guilt. And that's kind of what I read out of that. And that was one of the reasons I really liked this movie. It was a little bit of a different twist on, you know, guys were talking earlier about what types of ghost stories there are. And I just thought that was interesting, but yeah, go ahead.
Well, and I also found it interesting at the beginning of the movie that I wasn't entirely sure exactly what was going on. Because, like you said, she said it was a black woman in her mid-30s. I was very confused for a little while as to whether she was a ghost or whether she was a person that had supernatural powers or what exactly was going on. And that didn't become clear to me until later in the movie, and I found that ambiguity to actually be kind of interesting.
Right. She's very, very distressed. Clearly, when she gets pulled over and not distressed over being pulled over, right? She clearly mm-hmm. knows something is about to happen, something bad.
Mm-hmm.
But why that was going to happen? Who, you know, so like I said, was it something possessing her? Was something following her? Was she telekinetic or something? Did she have power she couldn't control? We don't really know that. We had no idea what her relationship is with this thing at the start.
But it's a nice little hook into, you know, asking questions, you know, as to what is going on, you know, because right after that, the first incident, we cut right to our main character a couple, I guess, days beforehand, as she's just getting back and into the force because she was suspended after slapping a civilian during a confrontation.
And by the way, that was also a really nice touch to adding nuance to this, because for a while I wasn't sure whose side we were actually supposed to be on here.
Right.
Because we start with a black cop being turned away at a bar.
I thought he was Latino.
Or Latino. He was a cop of color. Being turned away at a bar because mm-hmm. of a ruling where another cop had been cleared for a shooting related death. And then he's killed. You know, we see the tension of him getting up and going to this is again, this is not clearly a just your usual pulling, grandpa over because he's speeding or he forgot left his turn signal on. When you see someone without a license plate in a van, it's highly suspicious. So it's a tense situation there. And then, of course, he's killed. So that immediately puts us a little bit more in empathy towards that character. Then you have Renee and her telling the story about how she was under a lot of pressure and she was tense. She's dealing with the grief of her son. And then this perp starts bad mouthing her and calling her a bitch or whatever it was that he had called her. And so she smacked him. And I don't think anybody here heard that and said, well, he clearly didn't deserve to be slapped for that.
Well, I did. I no matter how evil a person is, a police has no right to do any harm.
Whoa. Whether the cop has a right to do it and whether the person deserves it, two different things.
I don't think that anybody deserves it once they're in handcuffs. If you're already beaten, if you're beating up a perp after they're handcuffed and arrested, then you should be fired.
Well, she didn't say that. She didn't beat him up. She smacked him. There's a difference.
Yeah, I kind of got inside with Phil on this one. If you're in cuffs,
yeah,
that's.
And again, there's a difference between whether she should have done it and whether he deserved it.
I don't think anybody deserves. He's an asshole and he's a scumbag. But you have no right to.
The issue is she didn't show restraint.
She didn't show restraint. She shouldn't have done it. But I think you could understand why she did it.
Yes, I can. I'll give you that, Mike. I can understand why she did it, even if she shouldn't have, and therefore shouldn't be a police officer.
But I think the reason why she was suspended was also because things were very tense with police and the community, and there's a meeting at the same time where she is being reinstated into the being welcomed back, where they're saying that the community is just very distrusting because of things wasn't going on.
Well. Abe, that's an awesome point you bring that up, because there's a scene in 10 minutes into the film that's really important, I think, because she and the rookie are doing their rounds, and they're driving down a street, and there's this little boy in the middle of the road.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And so they have to pull over to see what's going on, because, a little boy in the middle of the road at 11 o'clock at night is something suspicious. And so they start talking to the little boy, seeing if he's all right and all that. And then the whole neighborhood comes out of their houses, and it's a black folk. And they all come out and say, "Get the hell out of here!" Start ripping. And the rookie's like panicking. It's like, "Oh my god, what are we gonna do?" And Renee is a veteran, so she's more calm. But she says, "You know what? Let's just get the hell out of here. No problem. We're sorry. Whatever." And the thing is, it shows the suspicion of the community to law enforcement when law enforcement is mm-hmm. in their community. Mm-hmm. And they were actually there doing normal rounds. They were doing nothing wrong. They were actually
trying to help, but it didn't matter.
Exactly.
Right.
Bingo. That's what I'm trying to say. Yeah.
Right. And that's all in that first half hour of the film. And so these are all things where you're seeing it from her point of view.
Yep.
And you're getting empathy towards her and actually not a lot of empathy towards the community. Because it seems like, they're just being irrational over it. Because, again, we saw this issue. Look, I don't have children. I don't know if it's normal to let your child play with his toy airplane in the middle of the street in the middle of the night in an urban area.
Yeah, that is not normal.
I don't know if that's – I'm not trying to judge there. Maybe that's a cultural thing I'm missing. I certainly understand why the cop would do it. So, again, they're building sympathy towards this character, and they're weighting everything one – shifting it back the other as the film goes along. Even the scene in the drugstore, not the drugstore, the convenience store, right?
Yeah.
You're mm-hmm. certainly meant to be empathetic with the cops there and not with the store owner and not with the two perps in the store who were shitheads, who deserve to, if not deserve to die, for what they're doing.
They deserve to be in jail for armed robbery.
They certainly, well, to start with, they deserve to be kicked out of the store and maybe fined or whatever because of the shit they're pulling. Right. Yeah. And then it goes, then it escalates even further.
It becomes even worse. It becomes outright murder during that point.
Well, and also that scene with the little boy crouching in the street also serves as foreshadowing. In that it foreshadows a couple things. It foreshadows the fact that it is going to be another woman's child who is going to be the way to back to her own healing, right? And it also foreshadows the violence in the street of the 14-year-old. Remember the last cops that approached a kid that was sitting in the street or whatever? They beat him up, and we have that video footage later.
Right.
So it also, it not only does very well with, you know, sort of establishing so that we really emotionally feel, because again, I'll say it for the third time, this film did really well with just emotionally manipulating the viewer. It just really did. It was a really great emotionally manipulating film.
In a very good way.
Yes, because you were really feeling it. And like you said, Mike, we didn't know whose side we were supposed to be on. So what that sort of, in the first, you know, 15 or 20 minutes. So that also creates this kind of uneasiness. So you almost feel the same uneasiness that is probably thick in the air of this community. I mean, it's really brilliantly directed. It's brilliantly done. You know,
I want to spit something out before I forget it. Sorry, Chrissy. I just want to give props to the movie for showing Renee being a responsible gun owner and putting her gun in a safe.
Thanks,
you hardly
right.
ever see that yes. in the movie, so I appreciated it.
With I'm sure a lock on it that wasn't easy to decipher, referring to a movie we did. A couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, I'm sure her combination is not 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
And yet that was the best film of the year so far for me.
Well, and you know what else I liked? Getting back to just the human aspect before we move on and talk about ghost things and other plot things. One of the other things I really enjoyed about this was the loving nature, the loving relationship that she and her husband had.
Yeah.
Because that, well, that was not only nice.
It reminded me of Fargo.
Yes. It's a stable, it's a stable marriage. You could see there was a lot of genuine love there that they were paired together. And, you know, honestly, as far as horror films go, we don't get to see a lot of that. It's usually the one spouse being like, oh, my God, my wife's going crazy, or, you know, or the spouse is screwing her over and something's wrong, or, you know, it's I think,
or they're about to get divorced or something,
or they're about to get divorced and there's fucking problems, or
yeah,
I mean, it's like it was so refreshing to see this couple really loving, and yet because that, and it was shown so briefly too. I mean, the fact that you got all of that through their body language and just a few sentences, and you could completely see how their entire relationship was. Mm-hmm. Again, just very tightly written, really well done. And also there's that moment where she says to him, I feel like there's a different reality that only I can see. And I thought that was one of the things I wanted to say about the script, because I think the writing in this is beautiful as well, because a lot of these lines that are delivered have double meanings. You know, she's talking about her own grief there, you know, and because then the husband says to her, well, no, it's our reality. We both see it, meaning he's grieving with her and she is not alone. So I just wanted to bring that up more about, you know, the characters and stuff before we move on and start talking about other things. But yeah, I just wanted to make a point of that because I found that to be one of the things about this film that just I just so enjoyed. I was like, oh, my God, you mean we have a stable, loving marriage for a change? This is so freaking cool.
But not only that, but it's a stable, loving marriage with two people of color, which was the cliche, of course, and the trope is that it's the single black mom. And so it's so it is nice to see that. I remember you know, like as a Star Trek fan, I remember that was an issue with Star Trek Deep Space Nine, where there was because the lead actor in that is Avery Brooks, who was black, and there was an issue about whether or not the character should be going off at the end. And, you know, he's a black father, and he says, you know, I don't want another story where about a black man abandoning his children. Mm-hmm. And that's certainly there's an element of that where, yes, it is important that we reflect the reality of what we see, but there's also something nice about making sure we show the aspirational aspects of fiction as well. And when you're already showing such an ugly world, you know, then having that strong relationship there, you know, and it's not a well-developed role for the father, right? He exists solely as a support mechanism to the mom, which is also, by the way, another flip on a typical cliche, because usually it's the, you know, it would be the wife in that situation for a male cop. So it is nice to see, even it just enriches her character and enriches that storyline. And gives her something to play off of when dealing with those issues.
Sure. And it's also refreshing, too, because, like you said, 70% of, unfortunately, black children have parents that aren't together anymore, which is unfortunate. But even also, police officers have the highest divorce rate of any profession out there. And this film here takes away both of those and shows both police officers and gets rid of the Hollywood crap of the stereotypical divorced black family, and instead gives a new spin and shows normal people, them as normal people, no matter the profession, no matter their race.
Well, and the other thing that's interesting about this marriage, too, is that they easily could have shown this couple on the verge of divorce. They lost a child.
That's another good point.
A lot of marriages do not survive that. They collapse. And I just thought the fact that they were actively struggling together, because you see it in the opening, they're both sad and walking around that house. You know what I mean? They're both like, they are both together in this. And I just thought, like I said, what a refreshing. That was just so nice to see. I just really enjoyed it. I thought it was great. I mean, aside from the fact that they're people of color, it was just nice to see it, period. You know, because we never see it. It's always a divorce or bullshit or whatever. Or he's cheating on her and the ghost of his dead, you know, mistress is haunting the wife. I mean, you know, it's always the same shit. And it was so nice to see something totally different. So.
Well, and even with her, we know she's getting back from being suspended, but they don't make her that rogue cop with a badge. You know, that's...
Oh, yeah.
You know, no, so. They don't at all. No, and right. She's even... And I love the fact that she appears really kind of almost not confident. She's kind of not super confident.
Well, you know...
In that opening scene a little bit when she first goes back.
It makes sense. Sense though, because she's still struggling with the loss. She's still struggling with the very fact that she feels that she failed as a mother. So her own confidence and her ability to do anything is she keeps questioning it. So even though she's like, oh, yeah, I'm I can do this, she's still questioning it, even about being welcomed back into the force. And you can see that even when she's making decisions and stuff like that. But you can, as it goes on, you start to see that she's become more certain about her conviction and what she's going to try to do in terms of solving this mystery.
Sure, sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, and she's also, you know, lost confidence because she screwed up as a cop, right? I mean, she got suspended for being stupid. And the film is basically, I think what you say, Chrissy, is it's a redemption in many ways for the character. Because even though it's a thriller, a police procedural, a supernatural ghost story, a film noir, as you said too, Chrissy, it's also a redemption of a person as well, the drama element of the story. So yeah. I think that's pretty cool too.
She has to come to terms with her son's death. She has to redeem herself from her guilt, and she has to forgive herself for what she did that got her suspended. which she also feels clearly guilty about. Yeah. She doesn't make excuses for herself for that. She hates herself for it. You can see it. She mentions it a couple times. You know, she can't even talk about it, really. Like, when the rookie asks her about it, she's kind of like, oh, you know, there's like that hesitation there where it's not that she doesn't want to admit that she did it. It bothers her. She doesn't want to talk about it, like, because it disturbs her that she even did it.
Right.
You know, you know like, what's really well about, done. Yeah.
About the character is that she isn't an angel in a sense, you know, she's flawed, mm-hmm. but she generally also sees good in everybody. So she doesn't suspect the fellow cop or the rookie or all these other people as bad. She just sees them as, you know, good people generally and whatever. And it's only through her investigation that she finds out, the mystery in the film. And I felt that was good too, because she didn't have suspicions. She didn't have an agenda. She didn't have anything that motivated her to be either a superhero or a villainous cop. She was just doing her job, and these things kept on falling into her plate, and she's learning the things as we are. Though, as you mentioned, Mike, you know, you could kind of figure out the story, you know, at a certain point, what was going to happen and who was going to be the real villain at the end, and whatnot. So I felt that was pretty cool too for the tale. And again, you know, this isn't anything original or anything. It's just a good hour and a half, hour, 35 minute, good horror film, you know, with some interesting elements in it.
So speaking of reveal of who the real villain is, I mean, was this the same scene because for me, it was during that wake scene. That
the wake?
Yeah, where she's talking to the head chief and she looks.
Oh, the bald guy or the baldish guy.
Yeah, when Danny's talking to the bald fella. That was a moment for me that everything just kind of was already revealed at that point.
Right. Yeah, that's a fair point. And also another one when the head cop was the villain. I kind of figured that out too, because she leaves a message voicemail for him, and I'm saying, I turn to my wife, I go, I wouldn't leave a voicemail to anybody at this point. You know, because there could be a cover up here and he could be as guilty as too, and sure enough he was. So, yeah, you could kind of guess pretty easily. At certain points, and the wake, I think, is where the pieces were not just falling, but they were actually, you know, presents that are open.
It's more like the movie is holding a card to his chest and then drops them accidentally on the table.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Exactly. I feel that way too.
I mean, it doesn't really, you know, I think it's not terrible. It's just for a minute that I think they could have shot a different way. They could like be questioning, you know, who the real culprit is. I mean, if they had got rid of that scene where Danny and Penta are talking, it would have left some mystery left. Instead, if she could have ran into Danny all drunk and upset and maybe just think he's just being stressed out, and that could have left some questioning.
Yeah, yeah, no, that's true. But you know what? There was one thing that gave me, that was a red herring, I felt, was during the convenience store robbery, and the woman cop gets killed.
And oh, yeah.
Yet she had nothing to do with it. But if you notice, she gets killed by the robbers, not by the ghosts.
Yeah.
And that's
right.
And that's where you figure out, okay. And stuff. Because I was talking to my wife after the film. I go, well, why did she die? And then we're talking about it. Go, oh, yeah, that's right. She got killed by the robbers.
But it was
yeah, that scene was pretty chaotic once the lights went off.
Yeah. It was curious, though, that when, you know, Renee looks into the finds the box of all the pictures and stuff with the eyes crossed out, not only did she find Danny, but she also finds the female cop, Burke, amongst them.
Oh. But was her eyes scratched out, too?
No, that was what I was confused about, because it looked like it was only those select few cops there. Right. Maybe if they had more cops mixed in the pictures, it would have felt a little more like that was the thing that was kind of, I felt that Renee, I mean, she had a journey to go on, but she only did so much. The ghost couldn't handle it the way it was going. If maybe the ghost was killing indiscriminately, you know, killing cop after cop till it got the right ones, maybe they would feel more urgency. But, you know, it was just kind of going pretty good for the ghost in terms of getting the people who you know, were behind everything. There was nothing.
Yeah, the ghost knew who was who. The ghost knew what was going on. He didn't need any help. The ghost would have settled the issue. I think, you know, and again, this is two sides, right? Sometimes the ghost wants revenge in a story like this, and sometimes the ghost just wants the truth to come out. Right, to exonerate themselves or so that the other people can be punished because it's a ghost and it can't do much to punish itself. And this one, it feels like it was trying to do both. And it might have been clearer if, you know, it was on one or the other. Was the ghost just for revenge or was it out to get the truth known? And it would have maybe been a little bit better able to rope her into the story as opposed to be kind of witnessing it just from the outside.
Yeah, right. There was a moment where during the finale confronts Penda, and I'm thinking she's going to try to wound him and then take him in, but then the ghost just pulls a mortal combat move on him and just pulls his fucking tongue out of his throat and kills him. And I was like, okay, well, he was the guy who might have been the perfect one to put in trial, but I was like, okay, the chief is on trial, but I don't know. I honestly thought, you know, if Renee had not got the Zayas up there, then honestly, things would have probably just played out the same way.
Right, right. That's a fair point. Yeah, but I do like they went all the way to Zayas's character, Bautista, whoever character he played, but he was the head cop. Speaking of something else, Mike, I wanted to bring up to you because when I was watching, I was immediately thinking of you. I've seen the film twice now. The dream sequence, it's like I know you can't stand those usually, and I'm not.
I can't say it depends on how it's done. I'm not usually fond of them because they're often lazy ways of doing exposition. Right.
But I wanted to bring up that Chrissy bringing up the fact that maybe the ghost of the little boy, her son, was being like a interchange between the victim and his mother. That it now makes the scene better in my eyes than when I originally watched it. And I said, it's just another ghost. Dream sequence. But now it makes more sense. If I look at it the way you mentioned it, Chrissy.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I really felt that was her fear. I think that dream sequence was actually kind of important because what it was really showing there was that she suspected, right, that the loss of Tanisha's son, right, that had turned Tanisha into something terrible, right? So it was the specter of her dead son who had kind of turned her into this beast she didn't recognize, okay? I'm talking about Tanisha and the other kid.
Right.
Sure, now, the death of her own son, Christopher, kind of turned her into a beast. Because remember, when they talked about her hitting that guy or knocking him out, whatever, punching him in the face, it was like just after her son died. If you guys remember, she says, my son was dying or whatever, or had just died.
Yeah, right. She was in a bad place and she did something that she probably wouldn't necessarily have done if she wasn't in a bad place.
Right. And my thing is, I think what that dream represented was the idea that the memory of her dead son was maybe not a positive thing. Like maybe the memory of her dead son was actually going to turn her into someone she didn't like. Because remember, the rookie cop keeps telling her, people don't like what you're becoming. Now we find out later what his real motivation is for saying that to her. But he comes across as very genuine. So we think he actually cares about her. Maybe he does. But he says, people are saying you might be starting to go off the deep end. People are saying you're doing things you shouldn't do, you know, blah, blah, blah. And that dream sequence happens right after she steals the phone. She steals evidence. And that dream sequence is right after that. That's right on the heels of that. So I think...
Yeah, when she stole the phone, that pissed me off. I was like,
yeah, I do agree that dream sequences are not the best choice. They usually never are. But in this particular case, because it was extremely short, and because I just really felt that it was kind of amplifying her fear, or just I just thought it moved the story forward a little bit for me. So I didn't mind it so much. Normally I see a dream sequence and I just roll my eyes. I'm like, oh my God, you know, but sometimes they are necessary in fiction. I mean, I'm guilty of doing them in some of my ghost stories, because honestly, there is no other way to get the character to experience this supernatural realm or something. Sometimes there's no other way and you just kind of have to do it.
Right, and so I think it's a little different in a ghost story where you. And I think this is part of the issue with ghosts, is that they're not like vampires or zombies or werewolves, where there's kind of an established set of rules. What ghosts can and cannot do, how you deal with the ghost or don't deal with the ghost, varies from story to story dramatically. But it is a way to more directly communicate between the ghost and the person or connect it. A lot of time, it's one short segment in this film, right? There are a lot of films that just lean way too heavily on dream sequences, or use them for cheap shocks or thrills, or, you know, oh, it was just a dream. So it really depends on how it's used. I thought it was okay here.
What about you, Eric? You were about to say something?
I was, but I reconsidered.
Okay, fair enough. Well, let me ask you this, since we're talking, all of us giving our thoughts on the dream sequence. What was your thought of the dream sequence and dream sequences in general in film or horror film? Yeah, it doesn't bother.
No, I don't have a problem with dream sequences. Although any scene is bad if it's bad. I'll just say that.
Well, I think that's like, it's very easy like, to do a bad
dream sequence. If it's a bad
scene,
I'm not going to forgive it just because it's a dream sequence.
Right. But and I see what Mike's saying too, because if you can't do a dream sequence correctly, don't even do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know. And so I see your point there, Mike. Yeah, especially a dream sequence. Yeah. But no, you're absolutely right too, Eric. I mean, the point of a film is it should be good, and if the scenes suck, they should either cut them out of the film, or if they leave them in, then the movie's probably going to get a thumbs down.
As long as everything makes sense in the long run. I don't have a problem with people trying to put stuff in for exposition purposes, because sometimes you need the exposition. It's fine.
Yeah, I think in this particular movie, I honestly think it was just to give her a little more depth and to also show us that she was feeling guilty about taking the phone. You know, we needed to see that in her, because I think if we didn't have that moment to show that she was feeling guilty about it and she was starting to obsess on it, right? Watching it over and over. I think if we didn't have that moment, we might have almost been like, oh, well, she's been such a compassionate cop this whole time. Now she doesn't give a shit that she did something wrong. I think that's why I think it was there.
And yes, going on to exposition, you know, that's probably one of the purposes of Danny, because he's a rookie and he's a new face. He's a perfect sponge for some of these, you know, bits of information about Renee to be come out, because he just met her, so he's just learning about her. And that way we kind of can, as the audience, learn a little bit of things about what she's thinking about and stuff like that. Because, you know, you want to try to avoid, as you know, Bob, kind of bits of exposition. You want to try to at least get some idea. And that's why rookies or new faces, you know, these kind of out of water fish kind of characters are very important, because they allow us to kind of get into, become aware of information that is privy to people who probably were around for a while. Because it would make sense, for example, if it was one of the other cops that had been around for a while, to suddenly start regurgitating this information, even though they should be well aware of it, considering how close a lot of these officers are to each other.
Right, right. Let's see. What else do we want to talk about? Any specific scenes? Any of the characters? If we missed anything?
I would. Well, I first would like to mention my three beat, because no ghost story is complete unless I talk about the damn three beats. There was the teeth. The teeth on the hood of the car, the teeth on the floor of the convenience store, and the teeth with Danny in the final body cam image, or where they murder the kid. That's where the whole teeth symbolism comes from. So I thought that was a really good three beat, very well done. Because the moment afterward where we see the teeth and then the teeth in the body, those are not as crucial as, you know, where she's in the morgue. Those two moments are not. I would not consider those part of the 3B because they're just kind of incidental. And I did want to talk about some of the J horror elements in this in particular. I thought it was really interesting that they had the strings of the origami hanging from the ceiling, the origami cranes with the little pictures in the house there. And of course, we do find out later what that's really about. But why that was interesting to me was that, origami has origins in the Shinto religion, I think, but Buddhist too, in their religious services. And the origami, the paper that they use, represents like clasped hands. And it means clasped hands, and it represents the encompassing hands of the gods. And also cranes specifically, I believe, represent the soul. So when I first saw those, without knowing why the Tanisha, the mother, had those up, we do find out there's a specific reason later that has nothing to do with J-Har. But I thought that was interesting, the way they kind of brought that in, because there is a couple of other J-horror films I've seen where they do the origami strands with the people's pictures on them. And those are a thing. You can Google them and look them up. They don't look like they do in this movie, but the point is kind of the same. So I thought that was cool. I also liked the way the ghost kind of moved.
Yeah.
You know, very J-horror, the way it moved so fast. Yeah, that was really well done.
Yeah, the head vibration, for example, is very Silent Hill-like.
Yes.
But it's also it wasn't just a thing for showiness. It actually made sense in terms of the character of the spirit, because it is the thing, because the face is obscured, but it turns out that was actually a vibrating form of the bag over DeMarco's head when he was murdered.
Right.
And his head movements are him in his last moments constantly repeating itself. So there, when he's thrashing against Penta holding him. So there's actually some really, at least was also a reason for it, and it wasn't just as, stealing the style for the sake of using it. And it was, I also kind of liked, there was little interesting little things there. I was wondering, for example, the cross on the mother's pants.
Oh, I kind of missed that.
I think she worked at a Catholic hospital, and that's the reason why there's the cross.
Yeah, but
it's still
interesting that you'd be wearing that, throughout. I don't know. I felt there was a little more to it than just the very fact it was.
That's now that you bring that up, that's an interesting part of the story that they never really explain, because they go to her house and she's like, the place is abandoned, but like all the final notice bills are on her doorstep. The power's shut off, I think. So
yeah, she's living in the slums. Like when he goes to look for her, he finds her in the.
They also say she hasn't been working at the hospital for months. So what has she been living in this house? Like how has she been feeding herself?
They don't really
give you that information.
No, and because maybe the priest at the church was providing some way, but why wouldn't he provide some kind of housing for her?
Was interesting. I think there was a few different religious things going on here that were very subtle, like the origami, which since we're doing spoilers, it turns out that the kid was just in a you know, a day school where they made a lot of origami and it was like his favorite thing to do or whatever. So that's why she had all of that. But, you know, I thought that was interesting. And then they had the whole Catholic hospital type thing going on. There was also a very veiled hint of voodoo, too. You know, when they go into the abandoned house and there's the shrine with all the symbols and the stuff on it. And so there was that kind of thing too, which was part of the intrigue in the beginning of the movie for me, because I really was not sure what was going on. And I was like, oh, okay, well, we got some Shinto shit going on here. We got some crosses kind of, because there were some other crosses I noticed, not the one you were talking about, Abe, but there were some other ones. And I'm like, oh, and that looks like maybe some voodoo shit or witchcraft or something. Oh, something's going on. This is, I don't even know what to make of this. And so that kind of kept me on my toes. I thought that was really cool. And then, of course, it was really original at the end when the mother says to Renee, I can't control him. And then it all clicks. All that shit in her house was because she was trying to control the ghost of her son. And I just thought that was really cool because there's an example.
Put
of,
that together. Good call, Chris.
Yeah. She, yeah, yeah, that is a thank great you. Call. Thank yeah. you. Yeah. Yeah. But that made it so interesting to me because I was like, oh, that's so different. Like, how many ghost stories do we see where all this shit looks really scary and bad because you really kind of believe the mother's doing this? Like, you believe she's responsible for this. And then you kind of find out, oh, no, she's been doing all this crazy crap to try to control her dead kid, and she can't do it. Like, I don't know. That just was so cool, that moment when I figured that out. I was like, oh, my God, that is awesome. Like, I just think that's really good. So there are some fun hidden things in here. I think this is one of those movies, too, that it's so tightly written that if you're not paying attention to every single line, you might miss a clue. I think I'm going to go that far with this one because there were lines that I missed clearly because I'm hearing you guys talk about stuff and I'm like, I didn't hear that. So I'm wondering if this is one of those where you just really got to pay attention. It's not a lot of effort. It's spelled out pretty quickly, but it's also, like I said, a lot of the lines in this have double meanings. So you really have to listen.
Yeah, no, that's fair. A lot of interesting aspects because like we said, you know, supernatural film, and then there's a big drama element too, and stuff. So a lot of stuff in the film, even though it's just a popcorn film. But that's the point. We're here to talk intelligently about a genre that deserves
dissect.
Intelligence. What's that, Ab?
Dissect.
Dissect. There you go. Anything else anybody wanted to bring up that we haven't mentioned?
Nah, anyone? I think we covered this pretty thoroughly.
Yeah, okay. All right, sounds good. So before we give in our final thoughts, let's see if we have any news or what we've been watching or anything like that. Why don't we start with you, Eric, because you usually have a good amount of stuff.
Oh, dude, you have no idea. All right, well, I'm going to have to try and pare this down to what's relevant to this show because I have watched a whole bunch of movies recently. Let's start with, actually, most of these are rewatches. I rewatched, Get Out, which is still a fantastic movie. I watched a movie called The Other Lamb, which is currently available to rent digitally.
That was a film we were possibly going to do, but we have it on our list of like all the new releases.
Yeah. Pretentious douchebaggery.
Yeah.
unfortunately, I mean, it's pretty, it looks really good.
Stars the girl from A Sacred Deer, right? Or whatever it's called.
Was that the same? Deer? It might have been the same
the
girl.
Daughter.
Yeah.
The daughter.
Chris, you might want to give it a watch because I'm sure there's tons of symbolism in it that went right over my fucking head.
What is it called? But if it's pretentious douchebaggery, though, Eric, I don't think I'll go for it.
It's called The Other Lamb.
The other lamb.
Isn't it
right?
About a cult or witches or just cults?
And it's not witches. It's
All right. I wrote it down.
Well, I know there's a famous scene. Well, not a famous scene, but a scene from the film that goes around of this hot naked chick in front of a waterfall or something. And I thought it was like a witch.
Here we go with the hot naked chick.
There's one scene of that. And of course, that's Phil's interest.
well, I mean, piques anyone's interest.
I watched anyway, a couple of the Ocean's movies. I watched Ocean's 13 and Ocean's 8, both of which were meh. I watched a documentary, and the only reason I'm going to mention this is because Phil, if you want a real life horror, here's some shit for you. Called Athlete A on Netflix. It's about something that was covered in the news pretty thoroughly here in Michigan, because it involved Michigan State University. But it's about the whole sex abuse scandal with USA Gymnastics. I don't know if any of you heard about that.
Yeah.
But it covers it in depth, and I think it's something everybody should watch, because it's truly horrifying, and people need to understand what happened here so we can make sure it doesn't happen again.
Eric, if I can interject for a second, The Hunting Ground is another good one, and it talks all about Jamal Winston's rapes and all that stuff too.
This is worse. Sports. This is way worse.
You got to watch The Hunting Ground.
I'm telling you, this is worse. Okay, I have watched that.
They're both, put it this way, it's all bad.
No, this is worse. I'm trying to tell you this, Phil. This is worse. All right. So then I watched a movie called 7500, which is on Amazon Prime, where Joseph Gordon-Levitt plays a co-pilot of an airplane that gets hijacked. And it's kind of a weird movie because it just doesn't really have a big ending. It just kind of stops. And I mean, where it concludes makes sense, but at the same time, it's just like, okay, you're just gonna, all right, guess it's over. then I rewatched The Guest, which is a fantastic movie that we did an episode on a few years back.
We actually never did an episode on that, believe it
or not.
Are
you sure?
Yeah, and I'll tell you why.
We talked about that movie.
The reason,
yeah, I thought so too.
Episode on it. The Guest, the one about the guy that goes to the house and the chick from...
Yeah.
We never did an episode on it. And the reason we didn't do an episode on it was it got limited release and never came on VOD until 6 months later.
I'm looking this up because I swear to God we did an episode on this.
Never did an episode on it.
Yes, put our service to...
The other possibility, Eric, because I have those memories too, is that it could just be something we talked about like in a...
It could be.
Because that's happened to me a few times.
Next time we're stumped on a topic. There's one for us to do.
Or someone could contribute to Patreon, and then maybe they'll be selected on the Google random number generator.
Ooh. And then I watched, I rewatched the Bourne movies, the first trilogy, the Identity, Supremacy, Ultimatum with Matt Damon, and those are fun movies. Although in the Supremacy and Ultimatum, I don't care for the shaky cam during the action scenes. I think it makes things way too confusing. But other than that, I like the story of these movies a lot. So that's what I've been watching.
Yeah, there's a real art to the shaky cam.
And Paul Greengrass doesn't have it.
Well, some people can do it and make it easy to follow, and you can still follow the action and just add to the tension. Then other people just look at when it's well done, and they go, oh, we just shake the camera around a lot. And no.
Yeah, this is not a good example of shaky cam.
Right. All right, fair enough. All right, for me, I finished the novel Swan Song by Robert McCammon. So that was good. I finished it last night. The funny thing is my wife's read 12 books and I've read 4 books, and yet I've read more pages than her, because the two of the books I've read was The Stand and Swan Song.
So, big fucking books.
Yeah, since the past 3 months. Yeah, those are big friggin' books. It's a really good book. I highly recommend, even though they killed the dog. So I would check that out. Apocalypse, post-apocalyptic, good versus evil, and all that good stuff. So that's good stuff. I watched the first episode of a French horror TV show called Vampires on Netflix. And if you like urban fantasy or dark fantasy, you'll probably like the film, or I should say the series. I was somewhat disappointed with the first episode because I'm not a fan of urban dark fantasy. I'm going to watch the next five episodes and see how it goes. That's pretty much it. Most of my other time has been working on the website for Dark Discussions, the new one that's coming up. So when I have a lot of free time, I've been doing that. And that's pretty much it. So we'll go with you, Mike. Have you seen anything or read anything or played any video games of genre-related that folks...
No, nothing new. Nothing I haven't mentioned recently. Just about finished with the first season of The Alienist, which I still recommend.
I tried to watch an episode of that and bailed because it's old-timey.
The book's better. The book's way better.
Yeah, I actually was immediately interested, and then I found out it had nothing to do with the Greys.
Oh, boy.
So I was disappointed. Hello, Mike?
Yeah, that's it. No, I'm right here. Yeah, that was it.
Okay.
That's all I could think of.
Sounds good. Chrissy, what about yourself?
Well, Phil, I started watching Warning, Do Not Play. And I have been in the middle. I just finished a brand new ghost story last week, and I took the plunge, and I'm in the middle of another one. So that's pretty much all I've been doing. I've been still reading Providence Noir. I just received Orca Lit's speculative literary issue, which contains my short story, Omniscience. But I am very eager to get at the rest of those stories because I'm in there with some pretty heavy hitters, and like I'm so excited to get to that. But like I said, I started warning, Do Not Play, Phil, and the first 5 minutes scared the living shit out of me, and everybody was asleep, and I was like, all right, I'm not watching this tonight. So I plan to get to that this weekend in the daylight, in the morning with my coffee. Because that's usually when I like to watch anything that might be scary so that I can put the day between me and bed. Because I do have issues with my imagination so active that I can, you know, scare the crap out of myself and not be able to go to sleep. So anyway, that's all I've been doing. And 34 Orchard submissions just opened. And I got 150 submissions, and it's only day two. So I'm kind of drowning, and I still am aware that I have people from the last round that I still have to get back to. So,
by the way, you did remind me. I completely forgot. I apologize. I did watch the Warning, Do Not Watch. I did watch that with Pam the other day.
Warning, Do Not Play. Phil said I would really.
You guys are not very good at following directions.
No, I completely forgot about it.
But Phil said I would like it. Mike, did you like it? I can't wait to watch the rest of it.
I thought it was okay. It has some good stuff in it. I was a little confused towards the end as to how things resolved. And
okay.
We both could probably use some insight from someone else watching it.
Okay. I'll definitely be watching it this weekend. So.
Right. And I think that's on Shudder, right?
It is on Shudder.
Yeah. All right, sounds good. What about you, Abe? Anything?
Aside from my writing, I've been focusing on the two stories we'll be reviewing on our next book episode coming on later this July, which are two of Lovecraft's short stories. One is Dagon, the other is Shadow of Innsmouth. We are hoping to... next week is when we're hoping to do a recording, and this release date will be depending on the editing process on Phil's end. But I hope you folks are looking forward to it. This should be an interesting discussion. We've done several books reviews in the past, and story analysis as well. Starting up from Stephen King, and of course, we've been on a binge of Lovecraft stuff as well. So stay tuned for those.
Yep. All right. Very good. All right. So, before we get into our final thoughts, Eric, you actually do another podcast with your buddy Dan.
I do. It is a general interest podcast called the Askancity Podcast. That's spelled ASKANCITY. You can find it wherever you got this one.
Excellent. And, Mike, me, you and Eric are doing, another podcast on the side.
Supposedly, that's Cinema a la Carte, where we discuss movies that we don't discuss on Dark Discussions. We most recently did the 50th science fiction classic Forbidden Planet, and we have a new film coming out, well, that we're going to be reviewing shortly. That was about it.
Yep. Christy, what's the website for, or are you still looking for more stories, or are you capping it already? But either way,
I'm still looking. It's www.34orchard, that's 34 the number orchard, .com, and you can go to the guidelines page. And yes, I will be reading all month.
Sounds good. And Abe already mentioned the book episodes, nothing there. Also, folks should check out the Halloween Boutique Psychotronic Reviews that I released a couple of those episodes in June for LGBTQ Pride Month. We did a couple of art house lesbian films, starring Emily Blunt, her film debut, and then another one starring Lola Kirk in her breakout role. So people should go check those episodes out, Halloween Boutique Psychotronic Reviews, which are both under its own feed as well as the Dark Discussions podcast feed. All right, so I guess we can get into our final thoughts on body cam. So why don't we start with you, Abe?
So overall, I thought the film was pretty good. I think some of the performances were up and down, but overall it was pretty good, enjoyable. There was also some really cool shots. I did think, though, they kind of underused the camera, the body cam. You know, I think they could have really done some really cool creative stuff with that. I also really did love the bit of atmosphere, and some of the kills are pretty gruesome. And I did think it was a very intentional nod was a well-timed release, for better or worse, on this current social climate. But it's a film that I think is going to be hit or miss, mainly because the mystery is kind of inadvertently revealed prematurely, which for some people could take away from that one element of the film. But it won't necessarily ruin the rest of the journey. There is definitely some more layers to the film, as you may have heard from us, from our own points of view. I would still recommend checking it out. It's available on Amazon, and I guess there is also a disc release. So if you're still interested in checking out Body Cam, go check it out.
Hey, when you said it's available on Amazon, you mean rental, right?
Rental, yes.
Yeah. Right now, it's still not free. It's a Paramount release, and they have it as a rental. All right, sounds good. Mike?
Yeah, I thought it was an okay film. I actually enjoy it more now, having talked about some of it with you guys. I didn't mention that while I was watching it, I got one of those messages from work that inspired me to withhold the four things you're never supposed to say to your boss. You know those four words? I told you so. and so that did kind of leave me, it happened about a third of the way through the film, and that left me a little bit irritated and distracted through a small part of it. So that may have affected how I viewed it. I think it's a fine film. Like I said, I think it's going to resonate maybe more with some people than with others. But it is, an interesting take. I think a relatively nuanced take on what is otherwise a very hot button issue. And therefore, something that is kind of a bit of a live grenade if you're going to be making it into a piece of of fiction for more or less entertainment purposes. And I think they did a nice job with that. So I would definitely recommend giving it a shot. If not now, then I'm sure when it ends up on Netflix or Prime or Shudder or one of these other services for quote-unquote free in the next 6 months or so.
All right, very good. For me, I'm generally probably where Mike is, low, in the teens as a film, because it's nothing original or anything of that note. Obviously, it's as Abe said, its topic is very topical for right now. So the movie appears more important than better maybe than it probably would have if it was just a standard year when the film was released. But generally, for an hour and a half, good horror film, thriller type stuff. Good date movie too, I think. So, you know, thumbs up and definitely worth checking out. Mike summed it up also where he said, you know, it's not going to be for everybody. And if you're not really sure, you know, wait until it comes out free on a VOD service somewhere. But otherwise, check it out for under $5 for rental and under $10 to purchase. And the DVD comes out mid-July, and who knows if it has extras.
And look, and there are people, and I get this, they do not like their current events being mixed in with their entertainment.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And I get
that.
I think
it's coincidence that it occurred, though, right? I mean,
it's still a current event, right? Because this is stuff that's been going on for the last, well, obviously it's been going around for a long time, but as a thing forefront in our culture has been within the last 7 or 8 years or so. And so it's still going to, there are some people who just don't want to deal with it at all. And if you're that person and you don't want to deal with anything heavy or politically themed, you might want to steer clear.
Fair enough. All right, Eric.
Yeah, I like this movie. Check it out.
All right, Chrissy.
Yeah, for me, this movie is a high recommend. It was a really cool ghost story. It was noir. It had some J horror. It was just, I don't know. I mean, I really, really liked this film. I could see this being one of my favorite films of the year. So if you're looking for a ghost story that's a little bit different, that has some substance, but doesn't make you think too hard, this is definitely a really nice way to pass an hour and a half. This is a really nice turn my brain off and enjoy. Yeah. So.
All right. Sounds good. All right. So once again, this is a 2020 film, Paramount Pictures, called Body Cam, starring Mary J. Blige, Nat Wolff, David Zayas, directed by Malik Vitale, and written by director Nicholas McCarthy and editor Richmond Riddell. Available anywhere you can rent VOD, and it is also coming on disc mid-July, July 14th, to be specific, as mentioned. And if it seems like your type of film, check it out. And with all that stated, Eric, why don't you lead us out?
All right. Thanks for tuning in and listening. Let's talk about Body Cam. Come back next week. We'll have another topic.
I got more than any one woman should. I'm blessed. I've been given more than I need, and I don't deserve it. 'Cause when I'm lying in a coffin and I can't take one thing, all that really matters to be living really don't mean nothing. Yeah, there's got to be more to life than this. This can't be life, no, this can't be real. There's got to be more to life than this. This can't be life, no, this can't be real. I've been torn down like a worn down crumbling building. But I'm up now, and I'm up now, and I'm still living. Was chained to the pain and I couldn't feel nothing. I was waiting on somebody to come fill me with something. Yeah, there's got to be more to life than this. This can't be life, no, this can't be real. The ceiling in my car is there to be it. Oh,
It can't be real. There's got to be more.